Tuesday. Chapter 9. A Verbal Blush. Shane showed up 25 minutes early to Kosciuszko Cafe, which wasn't a cafe at all. It was an untrendy 60-year-old diner left over from the days when Crown Heights was still a Polish neighborhood. The decor was frozen in 1964. Formica tables, intense fluorescent track lighting, shiny red vinyl booths, and ceiling fans instead of AC. According to Shane's cursory glance at Yelp, lasagna was their thing, but he was too anxious to eat. He was too anxious to do anything but seat himself in a booth by a window and wait, and calm his thundering heart by watching airport reunion videos on YouTube. Besides running, this was his clean coping mechanism. At 10:02, Eva stormed in. She stomped to the hostess stand, looking notably different from last night's sleek, glamazon thing. She was simple in wild curls, clingy tank, boyfriend jeans, Jordans, unfairly sexy glasses. This morning she was even more dangerous, if that was possible. And Shane devolved from a composed adult to a besotted adolescent. Genevieve. That's really her, all grown up. Eva. But also definitely Genevieve. Shane's thoughts were a jumble. As usual, he hadn't really thought last night through. He'd never dreamed Genevieve would be at the event. His only goal had been to connect with Cece and nonchalantly ask her for Genevieve's contact info. And if Cece had asked why, well, he wasn't sure what he would have said. If he'd thought too much about any of this, he wouldn't have come. Shane watched Genevieve, Eva. He had to get used to her new name, whisper something to the hostess. She hadn't seen him yet, though, and he stole this small secret moment to drink her in, to try to reconcile the girl with the woman. As a girl, she'd been all angles, sharp lines, a wiry spark plug of unpredictability. A little scary, a lot breathtaking. Her expressions were in HD. She broadcast everything on her face. And then there was the dimple, that fucking adorable dimple in her right cheek. It popped when she smiled. It popped when she talked. It popped when she breathed. There was a matching one on the left, too, but it was less prominent. As if once God had so masterfully conceived the right one, he was like, "I'm exhausted. This'll do." The girl had been irresistible. This woman was something else entirely. Her sharpness had softened. She stood straighter and spoke with clever confidence. She was a badass writer, had been a publishing success story since 19, and wore it so well. Her teenage fury had morphed into something else. Power. The hostess pointed to Shane, and Eva strode over to him, looking stern and gorgeous. And he knew that he was fucked. She slid into the seat across from him, plopping down a tote bag that read, "Well read black girl." And then they were finally alone. Eva, whose written words were bold enough to inspire PTA moms to dream of hopping on a broomstick or a hot black dude and escaping their lives, said, So, hi. Shane, whose written words were lyrical enough to make the stuffy Pulitzer Prize board want to roll up, stream dam, and ruminate on the paradoxical mysteries of man, managed, "Glasses, nice." "Oh, really? Thank you, she said. "I found out I was nearsighted after I started writing, so I got LASIK. And I had 20/20 vision for ages, but then a couple of years ago in 2015, my eyesight started deteriorating, and my very helpful Hasidic ophthalmologist, Dr. Steinberg, said I'd developed an astigmatism, so glasses. I wear them now." Shane tried and failed not to smile at this. Her words were a verbal blush. "The word astigmatism feels wrong," he said. "Like it should be, I have a astigmatism. A possum, too. I always think it's a possum." "So this isn't awkward at all?" "Super normal," Eva said, downing her entire glass of water. "I'm kind of speechless," he stammered, still awestruck. You look the same, but so different. Cece made me wear that dress last night, and straight hair. Nervously, she fluffed her bangs. This is what I really look like. I know what you really look like, he said simply. Eva shifted slightly in her seat and picked up the laminated menu on her plate. You look different, too, she started. How? Your eyes are open. I'm sober. I'm stunned. Me too. How long? 2 years and 2 months. Is it sticking? I'll let you know in another couple years. No. You got this. A hot flush radiated across his chest, but he ignored it. So you had to make me evil, huh? A vampire. If the fangs fit, she shot back. Did you have to make me an adorable runaway with a heart of gold? I didn't make you that. You were that. Eva grabbed a half moon of 7-grain bread from the basket and began anxiously tearing at it. Whatever she was feeling, he didn't want her to be alone in it. In a sign of solidarity, he grabbed a roll, too. Just in time, a waitress appeared to take their drink orders. She was a 60-something minx with a fuchsia lace headband and an Eastern European accent. Just water, said Eva primly. No, I'll have a chocolate milkshake. 2 straws, said the waitress. She winked at Eva and then looked Shane up and down. Well, aren't you a chocolate donut? 1 straw, said Eva. Shane scanned the menu, stopping on the natural juices, ever mindful of his new healthy lifestyle. I guess I'll have the mint, kale, clean green mean juice. You sound like you don't really want that, the waitress remarked and bounced. So, began Eva, you've read my whole series? Every line. He popped a piece of bread into his mouth. You've read mine too. With a highlighter. I meant what I said in there, he said. I'm your biggest fan. I'm an English teacher now, and while my students are reading Hawthorne in class, I read you. You teach? Eva's skepticism was palpable. What school would allow you anywhere near their student population? I've changed. His confident smile made it believable. I think this is what writers call a character arc. I see, Eva cocked her head. Speaking of writers, your little speech about Cursed, it was like, what were you? Shane cringed. He never would have thought that there'd be a time when they didn't know how to talk to each other. Years ago, they'd had a purely instinctual rhythm, a wordless connection so raw that minutes after meeting, they pounced. But rational-minded adults didn't take such liberties. Of course, Shane was historically not great at being an adult. Just talk to me, he said. Whatever it is, I can take it. Fine. She shoved her glasses up her nose inelegantly and irresistibly. Your speech about Cursed, it was a lot. You can't just jump from 2004 to 2019, shock me to death, and then hit me with a rapturous doctorate-level thesis of my supernatural erotica. Those books are my babies, and even I know they're not that good. Hearing you talk like that, you? After 15 years, I couldn't breathe. She huffed, exasperated. Why'd you come on stage last night? Cece made me. You could have said no. True. And you could have worn jeans. Okay, fair point. Cece owns us all. Honestly, I was shook. Shane reached for more bread. I wasn't expecting to see you. Next thing I know, we're up there together and you bring up 8, and I just blacked out and said too much. We weren't really talking about our books, Shane. Everyone knew. I know. Fuck. I got a certificate for best communicator in AA. How'd I get here? Good question, she said pointedly. With impressive timing, the waitress swept by the table with Shane's radioactive green mint kale juice and Eva's milkshake. Shane took a gulp and instantly regretted it. The mint was awful. It tasted like a Listerine smoothie. He swallowed, cheeks puffed out, miserable. Generously, Eva slid her milkshake toward him. "Thanks," he said, taking a swig. He hated being healthy. "I'm here to present at the Liddy Awards on Sunday." "Nope, you don't do award ceremonies or panels, and you're never in Brooklyn. You've been very careful to avoid me." "I've been avoiding life in general." Eva rolled her eyes extravagantly. "It's true," insisted Shane. "Meanwhile, you mastered it. You made it to Princeton, got married, had a beautiful girl. How do you know anything about me? You're not on social media." "Nah, people are strange enough in real life. I don't need to view their psychosis through a zany filter," he said, scowling. "But yeah, in some masochistic moments, I've looked you up. You and Audrey are like a mother-daughter Thelma and Louise, with your museums and road trips and rallies, Travis Scott at Radio City." Eva preened, deservedly smug. "Audrey's a great kid. She got the best of me and her dad." "What's he like?" Shane knew he was going too far. "Travis Scott? Audrey's dad." Eva sat back in the booth hard. She grimaced and massaged a temple with her knuckles. "He's stable." Shane went further. "Where is he?"
"You tell me. Where do men go when they're done?"
Eva's eyes blazed.
"He's none of your business. You don't know me anymore."
"I know too much," he said. His words weighted with old pain. The kind that makes a home on the fringes of your thoughts forever.
"You don't," she sighed. "I'm not who I was. And when I look back, I'm horrified."
"You were just trying to survive," said Shane. "When you're drowning, you'll do anything to get air." Eva studied her black mani, her expression maddeningly blank. And then Shane's brain ordered him to utter the dumbest sentence ever.
"I've been meaning to call you."
Hearing himself say this, Shane knew he deserved Eva's incredulous, outraged brow raise. She looked equally likely to flip the table or die laughing.
"Riveting," she said. "I've been meaning to try lash extensions."
Shane tried again. "I couldn't call you because I was too fucked to make rational decisions. Things were bad for me for years."
"Please," she scoffed.
"You're one of the most celebrated writers of our generation."
"And one of the drunkest," he said. "Look, fame doesn't save you.
It just means that fans try to hack your Pornhub account to get your credit card info, track your whereabouts, and show up at your New Zealand Airbnb in revealing clubwear."
"Revealing clubwear? I'm struggling to understand your demo."
"You got grown men out here in witch hats. The nerve of you.
And why don't you just stream Pornhub like a civilized person?"
Shane looked offended. "Viruses."
"Oh."
"Anyway," he said, cracking his knuckles, "part of AA is making amends. I wanted to be permanently clean before I ever contacted you again. Now I'm ready."
"Oh, so you contact me when you're ready? You're arrogant enough to think I want to talk to you?"
Shane looked her squarely in the eye.
"Yeah, I am." "Fuck you."
Eva grabbed her bag and stood up. "Don't go," he blurted out, halting her with his pleading eyes.
"Please. I know what I did was unforgivable. I broke our promise, and now I can explain why."
"No, you don't. I'm good." She wasn't good. She was trembling, and it killed him, knowing her anguish was his fault.
It always was, he thought.
"We have unfinished business," he said. "You know we do. We've made careers off it." Eva sat back down. The tension rippled between them, charging the air and stretching for seconds that felt like hours. Shane was praying she'd speak, but she just sat there fuming and staring down at the table. Slowly, she began ripping her napkin into pieces, her mouth set in a tight, narrow line. When she finally looked at him, her glare was a conflagration.
"We didn't make careers. I made a career," she whisper yelled. "You drunk wrote four classics? I have to write a shitty book a year to survive. You can't be bothered to tour? I have to constantly promote. You're philosophically opposed to social media. I have to post all day to stay relevant. You're lucky I don't take a selfie with you for likes.
In this lighting? In AA, Shane would diffuse tension with a joke. Luckily for him, Eva was too lost in her rant to hear it.
And I've never even been to New Zealand. I spend all my time churning out cursed. I owe Cece another one, and I don't have a single idea. Now I'm going to go broke. And even worse, I keep backburnering my dream book.
What's your dream book?
Doesn't matter, she snapped. The point is, I work my ass off, while you, with minimal effort, have become a legend.
I'm only a legend because I'm mysterious.
You're a legend because you write about me.
She grabbed her milkshake back, spilling a bit on her hand. Distractedly, she sucked it off. Shane's brain left their conversation for a few agonizing moments.
You capitalized off my trauma, she raged. A time when I was in crisis, not lovable, not eight.
Shane stared at her, eviscerated. Not lovable. Eva had no idea the effect she'd had on him. How he saw her. How could she not know? Eight's lovable because you were. His voice was firm, definite. You can't imagine what you were like then.
I know what I was like.
You don't. Shane went dead serious.
You burst into my solitude, demanding to be seen. You were overwhelming, just wild and weird and brilliant, and I never had a choice. I liked everything about you, even the scary parts. I wanted to drown in your fucking bathwater.
Eva opened her mouth to speak. He shook his head, silencing her.
I idealize you in fiction because I idealized you in real life, he continued. It is male gazing. You're right, and I'm sorry. But I can only write my shit my way. It's my shit,
Eva pounded a fist on the table. At the next table over, a family looked up from their menus.
You get to decide who owns what? Asked Shane, voice rising. I've written 4 novels, you've written 14, a whole series in which you put a Creole hex on me.
She burst out in a mirthless laugh.
If I could hex you, you think I'd stop at roasting you in books? If I'm a vampire, at least let me do cool shit. I spend the whole series cowering in castles while my cross between Serena Williams and Wonder Woman, witch soulmate, gets to fight for truth and justice. The only thing Sebastian's good at is stop, she interrupted. Those scenes pay my mortgage.
Shane said nothing and quietly took a swig of water. His devilish grin showed behind the glass.
I will throw this milkshake at you right now. Think I won't?
I'm not doing anything.
Look, said Eva, cheeks aflame. No one was supposed to read Cursed. I wrote it for myself to get over you. I cast myself as a superhero to give me strength I didn't feel. And made you a useless fuckboy because I'm petty. But it turned into a career and I'm stuck with us.
Are you, though? Vampires die all the time. What about stakes and sunlight and shit?
My vamps, she started haughtily, can only die from silver scalpels marinated in garlic paste from a very particular vine during the summer solstice on a leap year.
Exactly. A smirk played at the corners of Shane's mouth. Ever wonder why you made it so hard to kill me?
Because I have private school to pay for. Why do you keep writing about me?
Isn't it obvious?
Apparently not.
I'm not just writing about you, said Shane. I'm writing to you. His words hung in the air a moment, bold and impossible to misconstrue. He hesitated, wondering how she'd react. Telling the truth was something he always did with no regard for how he was received. But Eva's thoughts mattered. I wrote my books like you were the only one who'd ever read them, he continued carefully. My books did what I couldn't. Eva's breath slowed.
Which was what?
Talk to you, he said. And when I read yours, I knew you were reading mine. You put in so many clues. I mean, Gia has to strike her enemies 8 times with her broom to kill them. A shadow of a smile passed over his face. Even when you were ripping me to shreds, it felt good.
like we still had our secrets. Eva's mouth parted slightly, her brows knitting together. And Shane started lightly scratching his biceps, the stubble of his jawline. Neither of them was emotionally prepared for this confession. When he felt Eva watching him, Shane stilled. Boldly, he met her gaze and caught her there, a breath too long. A charge passed between them, flickered, and faded. "There's an alternate universe where I never left," he thought. "Can I be honest?" asked Eva.
"Please."
"I cried for 2 weeks when I found out I was having a daughter." Her voice was barely audible. "I was terrified she'd be like me. My only goal is making sure Audrey's world is unicorns and rainbows. And it is. When she's sad, she reads Shonda Rhimes' Years of Yes, listens to the Hamilton soundtrack, and moves on. She doesn't hurt like I do."
"Did,"
Eva corrected herself. "My mother, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, they're all crazy. It runs in my family, but it stopped with me." Eva paused. "No one knows about my life before New York. You showing up like this, it's a trigger."
"I understand," conceded Shane. "And I'll go. But can you tell me one thing?"
Eva shrugged vaguely.
"You happy?"
She looked dismayed. It was like no one had ever asked her that, or it was something she'd never thought about, or both.
"I'm fine."
"How's your head?"
"I said I'm fine," she spat, her eyes welling up.
She dug her knuckles into a temple again, the pain obvious.
"That bad? Still?"
Eva's silence was answer enough, and her tears threatening to spill.
"Fuck." Shane's face was a mask of worry. "Do you have good doctors? Do you have a man or someone who helps? Does anyone take care of you?"
"Does anyone take care of you?" she exploded.
"I mean, no."
"Then why are you assuming that I need help?"
Eva began snapping a rubber band encircling her wrist. It was sharp enough to redden her skin. He'd noticed her doing this before at the Brooklyn Museum. Watching the compulsive way she pulsed the band against her skin, a flash of unease coursed through him. He wanted to ask her what she was doing.
"But I already know, don't I?"
"I didn't mean to upset you," said Shane. "I just hoped you had some support."
"Well, I don't. God, why did you come here?"
Overwhelmed by her reaction, he said, "To apologize."
"Please don't," she whispered. "I can't talk about that night."
And then a tear fell.
Shane shot up straight in his seat, reaching across the table. He gently held her wrist.
"Genevieve," he said,
and she began to sob.
"Don't follow me."
She grabbed her bag and fled the diner. It took willpower Shane hadn't known he had not to run after her. Instead, he watched her from the window as she stormed down the sidewalk, lining Eastern Parkway, getting smaller and smaller, until she turned a corner and disappeared. With every step she took, the years melted away. Shane was hurtling backward into his teenage self before the books, the success, the travel. Back in the dark ages, when his loneliness was like quicksand, when he'd ruin himself to make it stop. And the only bright spot in all of this was loving a beautiful girl with demons ferocious enough to slay his own. For 7 days, a million Junes ago.
Chapter 10. The Women.
"Pardon me?" gasped Cece, her lavender iced latte clasped to her chest. The condensation created a massive wet spot on her silk Gucci blouse. No loss. The blouse was off season. Besides, nothing mattered more than Eva's unbelievable story. Eva, Cece, and Belinda were crammed on a rustic love seat at Maman Soho, a cafe noted for its South of France vibe. That is, blue-tiled floors, string lights, and quirkily pretty baristas in bangs, and last night's lip stain. Eva wasn't up for an emergency lunch with the girls this morning.
especially after Shane. But there was no arguing with these two.
Shane was your teenage sweetheart? Gasped Belinda.
Eva slumped in the rustic love seat. Her two best friends had witnessed the exposing banter with Shane on stage at last night's panel. There was no hiding from them. So she'd told them an abridged version of the truth, which was that she and Shane had gone on a few dates in high school, nothing major.
Shane was nobody's sweetheart, she said. He was trouble.
So Shane was Shane, said Cece. And you were?
Not thinking clearly, mumbled Eva. Look, we just had this instant thing and then it burned out. No biggie.
Nope, Belinda wagged her index finger at Eva, her Reiki-infused bracelets clinking.
That ain't it. Details, please.
I barely remember any.
Eva hoped she sounded convincing.
It's probably a blur for Shane, too.
It's not a blur for him, ma'am, said Belinda. The way he was looking at you, my panties disintegrated.
Eva sighed. She needed a hug, a nap, and a sleeve of Thin Mints. Not this.
Eva, honey, said Cece, with exaggerated calm. Are you 8?
I can neither confirm nor deny, she said.
Cece raised a weaponized eyebrow.
Fine, I'm 8, admitted Eva.
And he's Sebastian?
After taking an extended sip of her latte, she said, sort of. Belinda yelped, fanning herself with her straw fedora.
What I'm hearing you say, started Cece grandly, is that you and Shane Hall, my Shane Hall, who's come up in countless of our book world conversations over the years, conversations in which you've pretended not to know him, you two were teen lovers? Secret soulmates who were so inspired by each other that you've been communicating through your art across miles, decades, and years of impassioned memories?
She slammed her floral teacup down on the whitewashed table.
My heavenly word, how could you keep this telenovela a secret?
A doe-eyed barista glanced over at them sharply. Eva tossed her a bright smile, then lowered her voice to a whisper.
Because I barely survived Shane Hall. I barely survived myself. It was a dark time. My home life was traumatic. I was a chaotic, angry kid. Why reminisce?
Actually, this explains a lot about who you were when we met, noted Cece.
Totally feral. Remember when that bartender called you baby? You stubbed your cigarette out on his hand and said, take my order or kiss my ass. Your choice.
No, it was take my order or suck my dick, corrected Eva. Belinda snorted. So why did you break up?
Doesn't matter. Eva waved her hand dismissively. I've lived entire lifetimes since then.
This is a word,
Belinda crossed her legs, her gauzy palazzo pants billowing.
Men don't define our journey. It's about honoring our queendom, vibrating at our divine plane.
Cece rolled her eyes.
Relax, Badu.
When I think about it, which I never do, started Eva, I'm just shocked we got so intense so fast.
I felt passion like that once, Belinda mused.
Remember Kai, the bouncer from that Bushwick hookah spot? He fucked the soul out of me one evening, and I turned over and wrote a sonnet called Skyscrapers Penetrating the Night Sky.
It ran in the Paris Review, said Eva.
I admire your ability to write about penises so lyrically.
It's a tricky body part to describe. One wrong adjective, and it's a tumor.
Belinda nudged Cece.
You ever experienced wild love?
She swirled her straw in her latte.
I'd die for my hairdresser. We've all seen what Lionel does with 4C hair.
You'd die for Lionel, said Eva, but not your husband of 20 years?
Cece had known her terminally reserved plastic surgeon husband, Ken, since preschool. His appearance suggested that God had struggled to remember what Billy D. Williams looked like in Mahogany, and had almost gotten it right. They were a perfect match.
Spellman. Morehouse. Alpha Kappa Alpha. Alpha.
Their grandfathers had been best friends at Howard, class of 46. What they lacked in passion, they made up for in obviousness.
I adore Ken, but I'm not built for romantic passion. Men are such children. I just read an article about mainland China's female shortage. Grown men are living alone in filthy houses and dying prematurely because there's no women to make their doctor's appointments.
Speaking of doctors, said Belinda, my gyno just performed a goddess ritual on my vagina. She steamed it, saged it, and then spoke wisdom into my crotch. I wonder if my vagina's wise, mused Cece.
Mine's dumb as fuck, judging from her choices, said Belinda.
Am I really laying my burdens at the feet of these Muppets? Eva wondered.
I should go, she said. But she just sat there, her face cloudy.
Belinda and Cece exchanged glances. There was more to Eva's story, and they knew they'd never hear it. These three knew each other's pizza order at Roberta's, shoe sizes, and favorite Spotify playlists. But Cece and Belinda knew nothing about Eva's pre-Brooklyn life. She alluded to a nomadic childhood. But actual details? Throwback Thursday content? Forget it. She never traveled home for holidays. Where was home, even? Belinda and Cece didn't know, but they respected Eva's privacy. Mysterious pasts weren't unusual for transplanted New Yorkers. Moving to New York was about reinvention. If you didn't want that, you stayed in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Once you crossed the Verrazano Bridge, you were free to shed skin. The Dallas Trust Fundy became a Red Hook hipster. The Tennessee hillbilly became a well-married tastemaker. In New York, you were who you said you were. Eva was private, but she was clearly struggling. Cece pulled Eva into an embrace. Belinda hugged them both. Nearby, a PhD student glanced up from her laptop and snapped a pic for Instagram stories. Hashtag heartwarming, hashtag girl power, hashtag nevertheless she persisted.
Back then I felt defective, she said, gently disentangling herself. Like an alien. I was in so much pain it burned through everything. My thoughts, my personality, my emotions, everything. Until Shane.
You met another alien, surmised Cece.
And the magic's still there. What's his sign?
Belinda Googled his birthday on her phone.
We never had magic, lied Eva, swallowing a pain pill dry. Just hormones.
Honestly, you shouldn't be allowed to have orgasms like that before you're 21.
It gives you brain damage.
March 30th, Belinda grimaced. Damn, he's an Aries. The thoughts of the zodiac.
Run, advised Cece.
Actually, you might need exposure therapy, mused Belinda, nibbling on Eva's untouched scone.
Spend a lot of time with him until you've demystified his memory. Like when you eat 15 donuts in one sitting to cure your sugar addiction.
But I don't have time to eat, Shane, moaned Eva.
Today alone, I have a meeting with a potential director and a parent-teacher conference and a book due to my inbox on Monday, reminded Cece.
Oh,
well, pros before bros, co-signed Belinda. With that, Eva reached for her bag. She was feeling floaty and tingly from the painkillers, her brain throb ebbing to a gentle wave.
Love y'all. If I survive this day, I'll text later.
Eva soon found herself stationed between two dynamic women in a Soho landmark again. But this time, it was at Crosby Street Hotel and with Sidney Grace, cursed producer, and Danny Acosta, the buzzy director interested in filming it. Set back on a quiet, cobbled street, the hotel lobby was like a surreal secret garden, where kooky dog sculptures and rococo chairs coexisted with lavish greenery. What better place to discuss bringing Eva's adult fairy tale to life? And it was going shockingly well, considering that Eva was mid-crisis. In the 8 months since Sidney had bought the film rights, a stream of big-name directors had rejected her proposal. Danny Acosta was Eva's final hope, Her most recent indie, The Lady Came to Play, was a Toronto International Film Festival smash about a violinist haunted by a ghost who makes invisible love to her during performances. Danny was wearing navy lipstick and a sequin tank, and the only thing surpassing her enthusiasm for Cursed was Eva's enthusiasm for her.
"And I see lushly ominous visuals with erotic undertones, you get me?"
Danny had been raised in East Harlem, and her voice had sumptuous New Yorican flavor.
"Like Bram Stoker's Dracula," gasped Eva.
Drunk on creative synergy, Danny raised her hands to the roof where a human head-shaped chandelier hovered.
"We're kindred, you and me."
"Literally," Sydney delivered. "Literally, the same way she would have said, sorry for your loss." She'd attended L.A. schools populated by Richies and Joneses, and now she had a deadpan vocal fry pitch that never varied. The biracial daughter of an Earth, Wind & Fire guitarist and a sitcom actress, she was quite connected, and a lot savvier than she let on. At 27, she'd already produced 2 Netflix documentaries. Sydney was desperate to produce a feature film. Danny was desperate to prove she wasn't a one-hit wonder. And Eva was just desperate.
"Danny, I saw The Lady Came to Play twice," said Eva. "What inspired the invisible lover?" "I made love to a ghost," whispered Danny. "I was vacationing at this bizarre ancient hotel in Istanbul. One night, a spirit whooshed under my blankets and we had mystical intercourse. Ghostly hands all over me."
"Work."
Sydney had no patience for this budding girl crush.
"What about production details, budgets, locations, talent? Who was the ghost?"
Eva was wide-eyed.
"It turns out I was hallucinating from an intense Turkish flu," laughed Danny. "My own hands were ravishing me."
Eva giggled. "I've lost my touch, pardon the pun."
"I like you."
Danny leaned forward, coffee brown eyes boring into Eva's.
"And I like your ballsy witch. Let's make magic."
Eva glanced at Sydney, who gave a deadpan nod.
"Danny Acosta," announced Eva. "I think you're the perfect director for Cursed."
"Same," drawled Sydney, who'd made the decision 40 minutes ago.
"Let's talk casting. Newbies, Zendaya, those dear white people cuties."
"I'm thinking actual white people," said Danny.
"Actual what now?" asked Eva.
"To get real distribution and financing, this film needs white characters."
"But they're black," sputtered Eva,
suspended between disbelief and confusion.
"They're fantasy," retorted Danny.
"Wakanda's a fantasy, but it's in Africa."
"Wakanda has Marvel power behind it," Danny reminded her. "2 black leads will handicap Cursed's potential. You don't want a black film, you want a big film. I see Sebastian as the Spider-Man kid, Tom Holland, and Kendall Jenner playing Gia."
Eva was aghast. "She can barely play herself. Have you seen her on a runway? It's like she's walking the plank." She was in a cold sweat panic. Black people existed and thrived in all spaces, realms, worlds. And Eva wrote Gia and Sebastian so well that readers of all races took them at face value, a triumph in any genre. Cursed was Eva's version of protest lit. Whitewashing her characters would erase her career.
"Vampires and witches are already other," reasoned Danny. "If they're also black, they're too niche. Imagine finding an audience for a film about a Taiwanese werewolf and fairy."
"But I'd watch that."
Eva's phone buzzed on her lap, cutting off her next thought. It was a text from Sydney.
"Be smart. Danny's our last non-D-list option. We'll work out kinks later. Say yes."
"Yes," said Eva, heart sinking.
"Kendall, Spider-Man, genius."
Minutes later, she was on the subway bound for Audrey's parent-teacher conference in Brooklyn. Her heart was throbbing in her temples. How had she allowed that meeting to careen so far out of her control? Where was her integrity? Maybe she didn't have any. Only a sellout would bleach and brighten her fictional babies for a paycheck. No. The very idea was a searing humiliation. Out of self-preservation, Eva banished it to the back of her mind. She couldn't break down now. There was no time. At least Audrey was at the top of her class. Nothing to worry about there. And so she walked into Cheshire Prep, all easy breezy. Here, if nowhere else, she knew everything was right with the world. She strode the hallways of the sprawling Victorian mansion with the smugness of a woman whose daughter was the queen of seventh grade. Eva was secretly proud of Audrey's popularity. Audrey was a leader in a school full of overachieving, hyper-competitive alphas from two-parent homes with old family money. It took confidence to own that crowd, and Audrey did it by being friendly and empathetic, and not an asshole. My golden child, thought Eva, sweeping into head of school Bridget O'Brien's office. With a bright smile, she kissed her daughter's cheek and sat next to her at Bridget's desk. The office was a nod to Cheshire Prep's 150-year history, with accents like 1920s club chairs and Edwardian gas lamps. Bridget herself was also a bit of a throwback. Tall and svelte, the 55-year-old gave off Hitchcock blonde vibes with her back-combed platinum bob and belted Burberry dresses. She had two interests, lasering her crow's feet and ensuring that Cheshire Prep became NYC's top private school before she retired in 2021. Thus, she favored students who won titles. Audrey had earned all-state gold medals from debate team championships, plus first place at visual arts regionals. She was so golden. Eva had a standing invite to Bridget's annual holiday dinner party at her Cobble Hill townhouse.
Audrey's suspended, said Bridget.
I'm sorry?
I'm suspended, whispered Audrey.
I heard her, snapped Eva, who was only now noticing the swollen redness around Audrey's eyes, and Eva's cameo ring on her left hand. Shocked, she glanced down at her naked finger. That morning had been so hectic, she hadn't realized she wasn't wearing it. Eva gaped at Audrey. What did you do? Audrey's eyes rolled up to the gold filigree ceiling, as if Eva's question, rather than getting herself kicked out of school, was the true indignity.
Earlier in this year, we spoke to you about Audrey's peer counseling Snapchat sessions.
Bridget's airy voice only just disguised her blue-collar Boston Irish roots. Until her freshman year at Vassar, she'd spoken like the entire cast of The Departed.
But she stopped making them, Eva inserted hurriedly. She did. And Snapchat videos disappear after 24 hours. But a screenshot lasts forever.
Bridget unearthed a file from her desk drawer.
A few weeks ago, Audrey posted a video of her session with Clementine Logan.
Clementine Logan?
Eva feared where this was going.
Her mom's Carrie Logan, the dean of students?
Bingo, sighed Bridget.
She slid a printout across her desk to Audrey.
Clementine made an alarming confession about her mother on the video. A student took a screenshot, created a meme, and it's been circulating all week.
Eva glanced at the printout of the meme.
In it, Clementine was mid-wail with tear-streaked cheeks. The image was blurry, but the caption wasn't. TFW, your mom's getting her back blown out by your English teacher.
Eva's jaw dropped open. Audrey sniffled. Bridget's Botox-frozen brows struggled to furrow.
TFW means...
That feeling when, said Eva.
I know. Mom has 24,000 Instagram followers.
Audrey's voice was shaky but proud.
She's familiar with social media linguistics.
Bridget looked relieved that she wouldn't need to translate back blown out.
So, the English teacher isn't her husband? Asked Eva haltingly.
Jesus, Audrey.
I posted it way before you made me stop, she wailed, her buns quivering.
And I had no idea Clementine Logan's mom was a cheater.
Mr. Galbraith, the English teacher, has been let go, announced Bridget. Bridget, I apologize, but Audrey never meant to hurt anyone.
Perhaps, but she has detention for the rest of the week.
Bridget smoothed her bulletproof dew with French manicured fingertips.
And the Honors Board is undecided about inviting her back next year.
A miserable groan escaped Audrey's throat. Eva looked over at her beloved baby, the spawn of her loins, and wanted to choke her within an inch of her life.
Audrey, can you wait outside for a moment? Managed Eva.
Thrilled to be dismissed, Audrey escaped to the hallway. Bridget waited 3 seconds before locking the door. Then she grabbed a pack of parliaments from her purse, opened a massive window, and lit up. After a lung-expanding drag, her posture relaxed. Only in front of select parents did Bridget drop her classy veneer and get raw.
Swear to Christ, Eva, she muttered on an exhale. I don't need this psychosexual melodrama right before I retire.
Eva met her at the window.
This was a youthful error. How can I fix it?
She grabbed her forearm, willing Bridget to remember how delightful she'd been at her holiday dinner. Bridget peered down at Eva with her Windex-colored eyes. When she spoke, she sounded exactly like who she was. The daughter of a man who, every evening of her childhood, ran numbers in their basement with a crew of local heavies while wearing a t-shirt proclaiming,
I came here to fight a fuck and I don't see your sister. You tell me.
Bridget's skin was flawless thanks to free Restylane injections from Dr. Reese Nguyen, offered as collateral to keep his ninth grader in school after her Forever 21 shoplifting scandal. And Bridget's enormous hair was freshly styled thanks to free visits to Owen Blandy's salon, offered in exchange for Bridget allowing Owen's permanently vaped-out son to graduate. Bridget O'Brien could be bought, but what did Eva have to sell?
What do you need? Asked Eva.
Know any English lit teachers?
She asked, taking a drag.
I don't think so, but Eva, this scandal can't be my legacy. I need to bury it with a new teacher announcement, fast. Find a suitable replacement for Mr. Galbraith, and Audrey has a spot in 8th grade.
Eva loathed being strong-armed. Bridget was a crook, but Eva had been hustling her whole life. But this was about her baby. Audrey couldn't get expelled. It took great restraint not to slip into Genevieve mode, telling this bitch to fuck completely off.
Give me a couple days, spat Eva, spinning on her heel. With her hand on the doorknob, she said, You really are so corrupt, Bridget.
This is your daughter's academic career, Bridget said,
stubbing out her cigarette on the windowsill.
I've done worse for less. But enough about your helmet hair, Eva clapped back.
Then she slammed the door so hard the hinges shook. Eva found Audrey leaning against a wall, eyes squeezed shut. Her Vans were placed shoulder-width apart and she was breathing steadily in and out, meditating. Eva knew it.
Audrey Zora Tony Mercy Moore.
Audrey's eyes flew open, and then she crashed into Eva, enveloping her in a one-sided embrace.
Mommy, I'm so sorry.
I try to be the best mom I can be.
Eva was speaking more to herself than to Audrey.
How is my daughter facing suspension?
How?
I'm sorry, stage whispered Audrey. Sorry, don't fix the lamp, bae,
she heard her mother say.
Get out of my head.
Eva grabbed Audrey's forearm and marched her to a private alcove by the girl's bathroom. She spun her around so they faced each other.
I'm pretty sure you broke up a marriage. Do you get the ramifications of that?
Yes, she exclaimed. But husbands cheat all the time with no repercussions. In a way, it's like I'm dismantling the patriarchy.
Oh, grow up. This isn't about the patriarchy.
You say everything's about the patriarchy.
Audrey began to weep. Her tears left blotchy streaks in her cotton candy pink blush, the only makeup she was allowed to wear. She looked so young, like when she was a first grader playing in Eva's makeup.
"Do you realize that I'll have to sell my fucking soul to keep you enrolled?"
Nodding and sobbing, Audrey saw a classmate walk down the hall and quickly shielded her eyes with her hand.
"All I ask," reasoned Eva, "is that you kill it in school, excel in art, stay kind, and cuddle with me during Stranger Things. Ruining your academic career does not fit into this scenario."
Audrey's tear-shiny eyes narrowed into slits. With head-spinning quickness, she went from sad to seething.
"Maybe I want more than good grades and Stranger Things," she blurted out. "I want to be a butterfly, fly around, following my heart. Guess what? I don't even love art. I do it because I'm awesome at it, and it's your dream for me. My dream is to be a celebrity therapist, possibly with a nail salon franchise, which you've never supported, BTW.
"You've never mentioned a nail franchise."
"Well, I've thought about it."
Audrey took a step away from Eva, her fists on her hips.
"Look, I messed up, noted. I'm not perfect like you."
Eva threw her hands up. "You know I'm not perfect."
"You are, because you don't live. You just write books you hate and obsess over me. You don't have boyfriends or travel or do fun stuff or want anything more than you've got."
She took a breath.
"You write about love, but you won't go get it. You don't want anything."
Eva's hurt was instant and excruciating.
"How dare you psychoanalyze me?"
Emboldened by her speech, she went further.
"Quick question. Why did Daddy leave? Was he not perfect enough for you?"
"Excuse me?"
"You're not a person," said Audrey with disdain. "You're a robot."
And then the only thing between them was endless, temple-throbbing silence. Another kid came barreling down the hallway. This time, Audrey turned away from her mom, waved, and smiled. But when she faced Eva and saw her stunned expression, she wilted, her bravado gone.
"You done?"
Audrey nodded instantly, sorry.
"You're right," said Eva, voice trembling. "I'm a robot.
A robot who set up your life so you have the freedom to try new things and make messes and still have a life to come back to.
I'm the reason you get to be a butterfly, you ungrateful
tween." Hot tears stung her eyes. No, she had to keep her cool.
"And another thing," yelped Eva, decidedly not keeping her cool. "When would I date? With what time, energy? I give it all to you, kid. There's nothing left over for anyone else. Think about that the next time you fuck up and then have the unbelievably reckless audacity to critique my life choices."
"Mommy, I'm
sorry." "I know," Eva spat. "I'm on a deadline. I gotta go," she said, storming off.
Abruptly, she paused.
"And give me my ring," she said,
slipping it off Audrey's finger. With that, she left her precious child standing alone in the storied hallways of Cheshire Prep. Once she was outside on the blazing hot brownstone-lined Park Slope street, she sank down onto the school steps. She was in too much pain to walk home, so she swallowed a pain pill and brooded. Eva did want things. She wanted the world for her daughter. She wanted to see her characters on the big screen racially intact. And deep down, fathoms deep, where she buried her weightiest wants, she wanted to go to Louisiana and research her dream book. The one that might turn her and Audrey's life upside down. The one uncovering the truth about her bloodline. The incorrigibly untamed, dangerously wild Mercier women. Eva wanted things. She'd just forgotten how to get them. She used to be brazen. Where was that girl who'd run away from her mother? To Shane, to Princeton, and then to New York. Who was that girl? There was only one person who remembered. and he'd been texting her since she'd fled the diner. With trembling hands, she pulled her phone out of her purse. Today, 11:15 a.m. S.H. Call me. Today, 11:49 a.m. S.H. Please, Genevieve. Today, 12:40 p.m. S.H. Just want to make sure you're okay. Please. Today, 2:10 p.m. S.H. Okay. I have no right to know anything about you anymore. Today, 2:33 p.m. S.H. Fuck it. Yes, I do. Today, 2:35 p.m. S.H. I'm staying in the West Village, 81 Horatio Street. I'll be here till Sunday. Please come, if you want to talk. Any day, any time. But if you don't, I get it. And I'll leave and never bother you again. Just know that I wish you the most brilliant, weird, and wonderful things every day of the world. Eva stared at her phone. Like if she looked hard enough at it, it would burst into flames, and she'd be rid of him forever. Brilliant, weird, and wonderful. When was the last time she'd experienced any of those things? She didn't know. But she did know she'd do anything for Audrey. She also knew that Genevieve had always lurked on the outskirts of her personality, muted by motherhood, career, self-preservation, and common sense, but there. Eva was older, but the same bones were under her skin, the same flame dulled to an ember, waiting for a spark to set her ablaze again. And most importantly, she knew an English teacher.